At least 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's disease, according to the Alzheimer's Association, and that number is sure to grow as baby boomers age. But Alzheimer's is not a disease that affects just the very old. We will hear from two guests this hour, two Wisconsin sisters, who have been diagnosed with probable early onset Alzheimer's and who have made it their mission to raise awareness of the condition and to offer support and hope for those affected by it, individuals, their family and friends, and the community as a whole. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 8 on this Wednesday, July the 30th. We learned about the efforts of Mary Kay Baum and her sister, Chris Van Ryzen, during my open line last week, and both of them have agreed to join us from the International Conference on Alzheimer's that's going on this week in Chicago. Mary Kay Baum is a Lutheran pastor who served on the Madison Metropolitan School Board, the Dane County Board of Supervisors, and she retired about 2.5 years ago from her position as director of the Madison Area Urban Ministry. She retired after she was diagnosed with early onset dementia. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to have this opportunity.
Now, Mary Kay, you called our open line last week when I was looking for special people from Wisconsin and important topics that I might explore when traveling the state later this fall, and you suggested that I get a hold of Chris Van Ryzen. Tell us why.
Chris is my younger sister, but she is my model of how to face Alzheimer's disease at an early age. She, much earlier than I, really went into the depths of the confusion of Alzheimer's and really through help of Western and Eastern medicine has researched and insisted on ways to improve her health.
Yeah. And we did not want to wait until the fall to do this program. So we are also pleased to be joined by Mary Kay's sister, Chris Van Ryzen, who is the president and co-founder of For Memory, an organization bringing together those closely affected by Alzheimer's. She also has been diagnosed with probable early onset dementia. And she joins us as well by telephone from Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, you were diagnosed, Chris, when you were only 41?
When I was 41 is when my first symptoms started, and my local doctor suggested that I go to the specialist down in Dr. Benjamin Brook at UW-Madison, who was then treating our mother.
Your mother also suffered from this?
Correct.
In fact, was that it, or were there other family members as well?
We also have an aunt, one of my mother's sisters.
Yeah, so obviously there's a genetic link to this.
Yes, both of our mother and our aunt did have autopsies upon their deaths, and both were clearly ruled as having Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And they both started in their 50s.
Yeah.
Or perhaps before.
And this is called probable early onset Alzheimer's or dementia because it can't be definite until that autopsy is performed.
That's correct at this time in science.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, you started experiencing some symptoms at age 41, and what were those symptoms?
I had memory. I was forgetting appointments, forgetting actually at that point to pick my kids up from school. I was also had physical symptoms of tremors, weakness, out of balance. It was shortly after my husband and I had started a new business, and I was finding it extremely difficult to get into the business, to learn what it is I needed to learn.
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't think of, weakness or those types of signs as something to make me think, oh, gee, I have dementia.
That's correct. That's one of the things that we found and why we started For Memory a couple of years ago was we met other people from across the nation in Washington, D.C., at the public policy, where we were going to speak to the Congress mm-hmm. about funding. But when we talked with each other, we realized that we had symptoms that were physical symptoms before and or along with the dementia, the brain, the memory symptoms. Mm-hmm. And this is one of our big pushes, is to make that knowledge available so that we're looked at as a whole person and not just a memory problem.
Yeah. And Mary Kay, tell us about your experience. What were your mm-hmm. first clues?
I had tremor, usually when I was concentrating hard. If I can be conducting a wedding as a pastor, the notes I would hold in my right hand, and that's where my tremor was, and the tremor would become extreme. I'd have to reach over for the podium. I had vertigo, that dizziness. Fatigue was probably the greatest, most disruptive thing. And I kept being sent to the Falls Clinic because I was falling. I was mm-hmm. one of their youngest patients. Mm-hmm. And because that would not be seen as too unusual for much older people, but here I was, in my 50s, falling so much, I kept getting sprained ankles and general weakness. I was starting to have trouble sleeping. I didn't even realize it. I had disturbed sleep. When I ran for mayor and did all those things in Madison, mm-hmm. I never had trouble sleeping. And now I was sleeping. I would want to sleep 10 or 11 hours, and then I'd still wake up tired. Depression, that can be a sign of depression, and depression is also an early sign with Alzheimer's. That's been recognized for a long time.
Yeah. Chris, you eventually, recently actually, wrote a book, Averting Alzheimer's. Have you averted it?
I feel that I have changed the course. I'm at a better place now than what I was in 1998. I would, as long as I do the regimen that I've found that is working, which does include nutrition and supplements and medication, and this is all done under the guidance of our doctors. Yes, my quality of life is higher now than what it was before, and that would be my definition of averting.
Mm-hmm.
Chris had to give up driving back in the late 90s, and now she drove from Appleton to Madison to pick me up, and then drove on to the convention center here in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago, through all of that.
All right.
That's just a very clear signal of how much she's improved with her regimen.
That's amazing. So what, and tell us a little bit, Chris, about the For Memory website and efforts.
For Memory, our primary focus is to replace fear with knowledge. So knowledge is our key. We also give people a choice. Often when they're diagnosed, it's like this is the end, but we give a choice. We give them information so that they can make a choice as to be able to make themselves have a higher quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
We offer one of our projects now. Well, we have three good projects going. One is that Mary Kay has started is community outreach, and she'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
The other major part of it and why we're here in Chicago is that we have developed a questionnaire and a database where we want to put the information on the questionnaire, and that's to have people out there, report what their earliest symptoms are, what makes us feel better, what makes us feel worse, the regimen that they're trying, and how their quality of life is changing. That way, they will be able to, by completing the questionnaire, you'll have a history of, for themselves, that they can give to their doctor. They oftentimes, when we go through it, we realize, especially like for myself, I put dates down. We ask for dates of when things happen, and you get to see a pattern. And then also helping other people who have the disease know what to what they may be looking at. And then for the researchers, and that was our big mission for this week.
So on Chris's, on the website, which is www.formemory.org, the questionnaire is actually on the website, and so those with memory loss can download it and fill it in, and but they get a random number from us so that they're not there's not an association with a particular person's name and information, and so there's confidentiality. And the scientists here have just embraced us and thanked us for doing this. I can't tell you the number of high-ranking scientists here who practically had tears in their eyes thanking us for providing this firsthand observation, anecdotal information that gives them clues of where they might be looking for the connections of Alzheimer's to remedies.
Yeah, I wanted to also ask you, Mary Kay, about the booklet that you wrote of photographs and poems and other things are put together. It's called Crossing Bridges with Hope. Can you tell us about the hope you have?
Yes, I recognize, and in the first pages of the book, I clearly say that it's important to mourn the losses that we do have, and most of us have a parent or a relative that has suffered greatly with Alzheimer's or a related dementia. But with that, to be able to go on and see what others are doing, there's a photograph in there of many of the people that we've gotten connected with who are affected by Alzheimer's or related diseases. And my photographs are twofold. One is to sort of take the stigma away because people can look at through this, 36-page booklet, and just appreciate the photographs and the connection of our health to the health of the earth. Most of my photographs are of nature around me, but also it shows, and I explain that for me, who has had a lifelong career of words, writing papers, you know, grant requests and so forth, for me now, I have found that art through photography or creativity through photography is a real therapy for me. By just concentrating through the lens of the camera, I'm concentrating on the here and now, which is really meditative. And the overstimulation that happens, we didn't mention that, but one of Chris's poems early on in this booklet talks about the overstimulation of even taking a shower, you know, having all that water come down on you. And I feel that a lot when I'm in social settings. Or even after this radio show, I may just feel exhausted because the communication is much harder for me than it used to be. And so I may, I used to take a nap after something like this, but now I'll probably, you know, look through the lens of my camera and get a real relief. And by that kind of meditative concentration.
Right. We will take calls for our two guests as we continue talking about early onset dementia or early onset Alzheimer's. We are talking with two guests, Mary Kay Baum and her sister, Chris Van Rysen, both diagnosed with probable early onset Alzheimer's. They have made it their mission now to spread awareness about this condition and to offer others hope and support who are suffering from this condition. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your questions and maybe even your own experiences for Mary Kay and Chris. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you will join Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben and his guest will discuss the latest developments in the electric car industry. That's later today. Right now, we're talking about Alzheimer's and early onset Alzheimer's disease with our two guests, who are two Wisconsin sisters, Mary Kay Baum. Many in Dane County are very familiar with Mary Kay Baum, a Lutheran pastor. She's been on the Madison Metropolitan School Board, a Dane County Board of Supervisor, two terms. She suffers from probable early onset Alzheimer's. Chris Van Rysen is Mary Kay's sister. She is president and co-founder of For Memory, an organization that brings together those closely affected by Alzheimer's, also diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. And before we go to the phones and our lines are full, I did want to ask both of you to comment on a study that was apparently released at the conference that you're at right now. A milder type of mental decline that often precedes Alzheimer's disease is alarmingly more common than has been believed, and in men more than women, according to doctors from the Mayo Clinic, who released this study at the Chicago conference. But I guess what I wanted you to also talk about was that a doctor says we are facing a crisis, that this is we have baby boomers aging, and the problem is sure to grow. Did you realize that this early onset pre-Alzheimer's was as common as it is?
I think we realized in the last few years that it was quite common, and we were surprised that the statistics had not shown that as yet. And part of the problem is that diagnosis can take a long time, and also a lot of people who have early signs of Alzheimer's or other dementias do not seek help because they think there is no hope and that there is nothing they can do, so they put off ever talking about it. And I think people who are highly educated also aren't aware that they're having word-finding problems because, like myself, I would just find another word in my vocabulary or find another way to say what I was wanting to say. And it's only when I was getting very fatigued and irritable with people that I used not to be irritable with, some of these other signs, I couldn't give directions. It was so hard, beginning to be so tiring to give directions to my staff that I would stay and do the work myself. That's when I really realized. But I think that just now, it used to be said that 10% of those with Alzheimer's have early onset Alzheimer's, and our a lot in the past, a lot of these earlier symptoms just went unnoticed or they weren't associated with memory loss, so the physical changes that we mentioned, neurological changes. Anytime someone has a neurological change, they really should consult with a neurologist. And that's, we think it's much more prevalent than even the studies are showing.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add, Chris?
Well, it is good to see that they are looking and talking early, early diagnosis. As a matter of fact, their goal is to be able to, even before some of the symptoms first appear, their goal is to be able to, especially in hereditary forms, know ahead of time through... one of the wonderful programs that we have is the RAP program in Madison through the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. And they're studying adult children of persons who have Alzheimer's. And by doing different imaging, they're finding that portions of the brain, even in those unaffected yet adults, function different than the normal or those from the families who had no Alzheimer's. So what we want to be able to do is develop prevention, that there are so many things that you can do to prevent. With epigenomes, we know that we will be able to turn genes on and off, and that's where the future hope comes.
Yeah, that's all we know about prevention is how to turn genes on and off.
Well, we know that nutrition, getting lots of omega-3s, avoiding toxins. Both Chris and I grew up on a farm. That surprised us that so many of the people we were meeting with early onset Alzheimer's had also grown up on farms, in addition to having Alzheimer's in their among their relatives. But it seemed that could be, we knew there was DDT mixed near our well as we were growing up. At that time, that was considered totally safe. Of course, in hindsight, we know that it wasn't. There were other toxins in the air and water in the Fox River Valley where we grew up. Concussions can trigger or be another thing that that contributes, certainly diabetes. What people are seeing is that Alzheimer's is a whole body and I would say whole community concern, and that avoiding MSG and lots of artificial sweeteners, those are some of the things that we have found anecdotally helpful. And make us, we feel better when we do that.
Let me bring in some callers. I've been hogging all the time. Betty in Waukesha has been waiting. Hi, Betty. You're on the air.
Yes, you have begun to speak. What I'm interested in, what other, you know, what more fully aspects of nutrition have you, and especially supplements, have you found very helpful, and why? And what set you on to that? What made you feel?
Yeah.
What sort of research made you feel that was helpful?
Yeah, maybe Chris can handle that part.
One of the biggest and first studies was done on omega-3s, so the omega-3 fatty acids. Those are the good fatty acids for our brain. You know, we went through the period of time where fat in general was talked about as being bad, and thus we probably took away the one things that we did need, which were the omega-3 fatty acids through salmon oil, fish oils, flaxseed, and then in with that would be like walnuts, the whole nut series, the peanuts, all the nuts and whole grains. The anti-inflammatories. So using green tea, ginger, rosemary, all of these things are natural. You could use in your foods. We have the, of course, they always talk about the antioxidants. Those are excellent. So all of the good fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Have levels, have blood levels checked for vitamin B, Bs, the vitamin D. Vitamin C is good in that it helps all the other vitamins work better. They're also, one of the latest ones was brought up by our neurologist, is vitamin A. But all of these should be done, you know, through checking so that you know how your levels are.
Yeah, Mary Kay, I read that your pharmacist smiles when you get your prenatal vitamins, so you get your folic acid?
Yes, folic acid. I've had chronic low iron also, and that is an important... You might have too much iron or not enough iron, and we're finding out at this conference that's one of the complicated areas that we'll be paying more attention to. I never associated it with Alzheimer's, but it may well be. Chris has mentioned vitamin B. What we're finding is that many, and one of the posters here, one of the poster presentations besides our own, indicated that vitamin B5 and B7, which are hardly ever tested, turn out among people with memory loss to be way out of sync or really low.
Really? I've never heard of B5 and B7, so that's...
Chris might mention more about that because she's been tested, and what did it say? You had, like, virtually no vitamin B5 and 7 in your system?
Correct. That's biotin and... I never can pronounce this, so it's pantothenic acid.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I think I have heard those scientific terms.
Right, and that study is being done by Dr. Cooper, who was with the Memory Center in Oshkosh, but now has moved to La Crosse, and she is in the press.
Let me get some other callers. Sue in Clinton. Hi, Sue, you're on the air.
Hi. My mom has dementia, but we've never been told, like, if it's Alzheimer's or, you know, what kind of dementia. What is the difference between the dementias?
That's a complicated question, and in fact, many of the papers being presented here in Chicago, we're differentiating that and making it, giving clues to physicians on how to make those differentiations. I don't think it would be wise for us to try to do that over the phone, but the memory clinics, and Wisconsin does have several, is fortunate to have several, can do an analysis. I think it's absolutely important that you find out you get a specialist working with your mother, even if it doesn't seem at her, I don't know at what age she is or anything or how far along she is, but even if it doesn't seem like there's a lot that can be done for her if it's very, very advanced, it's important for you and any of your children. And the other thing we really stress is to arrange for an autopsy. For a while, years back, hospitals routinely had to perform so many autopsies in order to keep their accreditation. That has dropped. That requirement has dropped. More and more researchers, but also family physicians, realize that how important that is. It's not done because there's suspicion of wrongdoing. It is done largely to help future generations. We are fortunate in Wisconsin to have a brain bank in Madison. If you've ever used the brown card at the UW hospitals, that's one easy way to know that you
can have an autopsy done at your death with no cost. But that's not the only way. And
Mary Kay, why do you think that's so important?
It helps the next generation know mm-hmm. what the genetic makeup is. Not that everybody in the family is going to have, of course, they're not going to all have the same genes as one or other parent. But and nowadays, they save tissue from these autopsies so that as science develops, further studies can be done from that initial autopsy. So we have no idea of the wealth of information that will provide for the families in the future. Both our aunt and our mother had autopsies at a time when that wasn't routinely or very often even discussed being done. I think now pastors and all types of clergy and many people are trying to pass on that these are important things, important information to get.
Yeah, and you have two adult children, Mary Kay?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and so are they doing anything or monitoring or
they often accompany me to mm-hmm. my visits. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that people can do. The average person can't take in everything a physician or especially a specialist is telling you, much less somebody who is having some problems with verbal comprehension or is mm-hmm. themselves, you know, worried about what's going on. Accompanying someone is a very helpful thing, and taking notes for them and then being able to discuss that afterwards. I think the most important thing my son and daughter do is listen to me hear my concerns. I would expand that to members throughout the community need to be doing that. We have important stories to tell, and they are very hopeful stories.
Yes. There's one more reason mm-hmm. to go to a memory center is that dementia does not necessarily mean Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and you want to be able to rule out the treatable causes of dementia, which could be lack of sleep, maybe a B12 deficiency, mm-hmm. maybe there's medication interactions. There's numerous more things that that are treatable, and
just dehydration.
Dehydration would be a very good one too. Yes.
We are talking with Chris Van Rysen. She is the president and co-founder of For Memory, an organization bringing together those closely affected by Alzheimer's. She also has been diagnosed with probable early onset Alzheimer's, was diagnosed when she was only 41. She is the sister of Mary Kay Baum, who is a Lutheran pastor who has been on the Madison Metropolitan School Board, a Dane County Board of Supervisor member. Mary Kay Baum also the director of the Madison Area Urban Ministry. She retired from that position just 2.5 years ago after she, too, was diagnosed with early onset dementia. Both of our guests joining us from Chicago, where they are attending the International Alzheimer's Conference, sharing information with you about living with Alzheimer's, and in particular early onset Alzheimer's. And we welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Veronica Rickard in for Kathleen Dunn after 9 o'clock. Veronica's guests say Americans should consider a prosperity agenda where the government recognizes that by ensuring the economic and domestic future of other countries, we can ensure our own safety and economic success. That's coming up after 9. We're talking about early onset Alzheimer's with two guests, Mary Kay Baum and Chris Van Ryzen. And our next caller is Joe in Oconomowoc. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Hi, guests. Thanks for taking my call. I've been hanging on for quite some time. I think this is very interesting. What I haven't heard addressed for not only treatment but prevention, well, actually treatment, is exercise, primarily cardiovascular activity. And I think, Joy, you did have a guest on some time ago that did talk about that, the brain being a muscle, and I read it somewhere as well. I don't know if the jury's still out on it, but it certainly makes sense. And I do believe, Joy, your guest spoke of the fact that even treatment, you can actually improve symptoms. When I say cardiovascular activity, I mean really getting out and getting your heart pumping like 3 times a week, 20 minutes, something like that. And I'd be interested to know what your guests think, and if their seminar might address that as well.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that sometimes when we hear that recommendation, we feel guilty or shamed because we have, sometimes in our symptoms, we don't feel up to that, that we used to enjoy, you know, romping in the woods with children and pets and so forth, and now we feel uncertain of ourselves physically. We feel clumsy or slower in our walking. But you're absolutely correct. We can't leave it at that because that physical exercise is important. So many of us, when I went to the Falls Clinic, for instance, you know, physical therapy for balance became a good thing for me. There's a doctor here that we've met before from New York, Dr. Bragan, who stresses exercise, just small exercises with one's hands, mild exercises, even while sitting, can really help the brain. And when you think of it, a child has learned first through their hands. And that may lead on to, you know, whole body. And sometimes some of the supplements are also very helpful in that process. Now, for me, what I have found is that I never enjoyed, maybe growing up on a farm where you didn't need extra exercise, what I have found that rather than driving to a gym and working out there, but rather stepping outside my now rural countryside and taking photographs, that I end up taking very long hikes on very rugged terrain, and that has been my, you know, favorite form of exercise, and I can do that for hours a day now. Really serious hikes. I think this is an area that we struggle with because there are these physical, even changes in gait. What did you say, Chris, that you used to wear down one side of your shoe?
Right. Yeah, the soles of one of my shoes would actually develop a hole in the bottom because I was unknowingly dragging that foot a little bit.
So it's customizing. Some people have found swimming, but then they have to avoid the chlorine in the water. You know, so they it's very important. Many of us have found modified yoga an excellent place to start.
Yeah. Chris, did you use exercise at all in your recovery or treatment of your condition?
Yes. Again, fatigue was a high problem for me. Mm-hmm. So it's balance. You have to do enough mental exercise, stimulation, enough physical movement, not to, you know, just sit, even if it feels bad to walk, and then nutrition and rest. Mm-hmm. So as long as it's balanced, and not to overdo any one of those.
Joe, thank you very much for the call. Helen in Sheboygan is with us now. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I'm calling because Chris and Mary Kay are cousins of mine.
Oh.
Yes, hello, Helen.
Hi. And I And I'm so, it's nice to be related to such courageous, strong, wonderful women.
Yeah.
I really appreciate what you're doing. And my question, though, is you said, Mary Kay, that it's a community responsibility. If you don't live in Madison, well, in Sheboygan, for instance, if I wanted to be helpful, to be a volunteer, what would I do?
One thing is to check with your local Alzheimer's Association. I'm on the board of mine locally here, and by the way, it's one of the first chapters who's had somebody with the disease serve on the board, and we're going to be going more in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, any civic group or congregation or other group that, or anytime you can gather some people together, to have one of us tell our story would be so helpful. It may take a couple sessions to get all the questions answered, and for us to relay enough information to be really helpful. But I'd put that as the number one. I don't know what do you think, Chris? You're in the Appleton area, so you're definitely far from Madison.
Well, one of the personal things that you could do for a person, if you particularly know that they have, would be to ask them if you could accompany them to the doctors for them. Oftentimes, they don't have family members.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear too often in our group, lots of times the families separate, actually, from people who have the Alzheimer's. So make sure that maybe you could replace their, or maybe they're not living close to their family.
I also wanted to ask you, Mary Kay, in terms of, I guess, community involvement, you are going to, in your role as on the board of the Alzheimer's Association in Madison, going to have mm-hmm. some sort of, I don't know, you're going to talk to legislative candidates during the fall elections to try to see what they can do or what can they do about this?
Yes, we're basically asking candidates what are they going to do given the tremendous increase in the numbers of people, us baby boomers. By the way, I'm 61, was diagnosed at age 57. Chris is about a year younger than I. We're the beginning of the baby boomers. And even people who don't get it early onset but get it later in life, and it's expected for those over the age of 65 that 1 in 8 will have Alzheimer's or another dementia. And those over the age of 85, very likely close to half the population over the age of 85 get a disease like this. The awareness to our all local, state, and federal candidates and office holders that they need to develop plans, that they are going to have serious problems with the medical costs, the Medicare and other governmental assistance for the costs of this kind of, if Alzheimer's is just left to run its course, if we don't do prevention and we don't label MSG, and if we don't do everything we can to reduce symptoms for those who have Alzheimer's, more people will get institutionalized and therefore at great social cost and at great financial cost, both to the families but also to all of us in this country.
Yeah. Gail in Delavan is with us now. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I work at a nursing home, and I see that a lot of the elderly, they'll get drugs for anxiety or they'll have panic attacks or something like that. But can they, once you're diagnosed, whether it's 41 or 61, is there something that you can take that can halt the process? And
yeah, all right, medications.
There are several drugs now that are. That's what they're advertised to do, is to halt the process. Today or yesterday, you may have heard on the national news that it was announced here that the second stage of a three-stage study that actually reduced the a drug that goes to the tau inside the cells in the brain that actually reduced loss of memory, in other words, improved memory for the people in the study. This will still be another couple years before this would be routinely available. The persons who volunteer for these clinical studies, whether they are in the placebo group or in the ones who get the drugs, are very courageous people. Chris and I think, believe that it's not a one cure-all, especially for all the different even types of Alzheimer's. There are actually different genes involved for different families. Our own family doesn't know exactly what gene we're affected by. And there are a host of things that can be done even while someone's in a nursing home, even with, you know, a more advanced Alzheimer's, just to improve the quality of life. And some of that is nutritional. If we at early stage find that that artificial sweeteners make us lose our memory, actually.
Right. I'm gonna have to think twice before I do any artificial sweeteners. Chris, we have less than a minute to go. Did you have any final thoughts on medication, or leave us with a few words of hope?
With the for the agitation or in nursing homes, actually, quality of life can be helped a lot with aromatherapy, like using lavender sprays, using high quality. So there's many things that can be done that are not drug-related.
Yeah. Chris has also just come back from a camp in which children or teenagers who have someone in the household with Alzheimer's got a week away with each other. And that kind of social support for family members is very important.
We could go on and on, but we're out of time. Thank you, Mary Kay Baum and Chris Van Ryzen, for being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris Van Ryzen, Mary Kay Baum, both sisters, and both diagnosed with early onset dementia. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Rob Ferret for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.